Now we turn our attention to a secret history and a dilemma. How do the military and civilian leaders of a nation manage a new weapon after they've witnessed it as, quote, a rain of ruin from the air, the like of which has never been seen on this earth? That quote from President Harry Truman, speaking after the U.S. dropped an atomic bomb on the Japanese city of Hiroshima. That kicked off the era of nuclear weapons and debates among presidents and military leaders about how, when, and if we should use them. And it's an era that hasn't ended, even decades after the Cold War. Fred Kaplan is the national security columnist for Slate. He's the author of a number of books. His latest is called The Bomb Presidents, Generals, and the Secret History of Nuclear War. Fred, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks.
Fred, the era where we were all scared of nuclear weapons, the duck and cover drills, the day after on TV, that's gone. But your book is a reminder the nuclear weapons era is still with us. Why do we have that that disconnect, do you think?
Well, you know, for 30 years after the end of the Cold War, it seemed that the possibility of anybody using any of these things or any conflict serious enough for them to arise was off the books. I think things changed on August 8th of 2017 when President Trump came out of his golf clubhouse in New Jersey and said that if North Korea, continued to make threatening noises and tested missiles and nuclear devices, that we would unleash fire and fury on North Korea like the earth had never seen. That's the first time any president has talked like that, especially not talking about what we would do in response to an attack, but in response to a country developing the ability to launch an attack. And all of a sudden, people got very nervous, but it was kind of a vague anxiety because it had been so long since we'd ever had to worry about this before. And in the case of people under a certain age, they'd never thought about it. So that's why I thought it would be useful to write this history spelling out where all of this stuff came from.
Going back to the beginning, now in my head, Fred, I always think of nuclear weapons, everybody involved in the process looking on them as a last resort, a desperation measure. You write, no, a lot of the people who were establishing military doctrine surrounding nuclear weapons wanted to use them, big war, small war, whatever. Could you talk about that attitude?
Yeah. It's true. All through the 50s and into the early 60s, the policy of the United States, and by the way, we have always and still do have a policy of reserving the right to be the first to use nuclear weapons in a conflict. But the policy in the 50s and early 60s was that if the Soviet Union invaded Western Europe or occupied West Berlin, even if they did not use nuclear weapons first, the policy was to unleash our entire atomic arsenal against every target in the Soviet Union, the satellite nations of Eastern Europe, and even China, even if China had no involvement in the war. And it was estimated that this would kill 285 million people. And, you know, this wasn't just some plan cooked up by crazy generals at Strategic Air Command in Omaha. This was a plan approved by the Joint Chiefs of Staff and by President Eisenhower.
When it comes to our nuclear arsenal, I think if you read some histories, there is this careful consideration of exactly what we need as a deterrence force, as a force to stop any retaliation from Russia and maybe China. A running theme through your book is that a lot of what we ended up spending money on had to do with bureaucratic turf wars among the leaders of the various military branches.
Yeah, especially early on, there was a big fight between the Air Force and the Navy, and I uncovered documents, in some cases, transcripts of tape recordings where the heads of the Navy is talking about the Air Force and the Air Force talking about the Navy in far harsher terms than they talked about the communists. They viewed each other as a mortal threat. Initially, the Air Force controlled the bomb with the B-52 bombers. Then the Navy came up with the Polaris submarine, which would be an invulnerable nuclear weapon, unlike the bombers, where, you know, you could attack the bases, you could attack missile sites. So, yeah, the arms race in the beginning stage was as much a race between the Air Force and the Navy at a time when really the Soviet missile force was stagnant than it was between the U.S. and the Soviet Union. There's a lot of bureaucratic politics in all of these decision making.
And a running question again for a number of years, maybe decades, is it possible to have a limited nuclear attack? Can we, say, just use nuclear weapons against Russian military targets? Can we be a little nuclear without spilling over into full-on nuclear war? Can you share some of the key points in that question?
Well, I mean, this was kind of a hope. I mean, you know, you have to think back to, again, the 1960s, early 60s especially. It was assumed that there probably would be a war between the United States and the Soviet Union. It was then assumed that this war would probably go nuclear at some point. And there were some people who said, okay, can we do something besides this Strategic Air Command plan of just unleashing everything all at once? Because, see, by the early 60s, the dilemma was the Soviet Union started to develop their own nuclear arsenal that could hit us. So this threat of deterrence, where if they invade Western Europe, we'll clobber them with nukes, becomes a little less credible when they can clobber us right back with their own nukes. So people started thinking, can we maybe come up with some limited options? Maybe we just throw some weapons just to knock out their missiles, and maybe we can keep this thing controlled, keep it under wraps. But, you know, there was never any evidence, and still is no evidence, that the Russians think this way about nuclear war, that once you start unleashing even a little bit of this mayhem, that command control and communications start to break down. You really don't know what's going on the battlefield. I mean, you know, the phrase fog of war, this would be a radioactive fog of war. And even people who have proposed these strategies for the best of intentions admitted when pressed that it was quite likely that things would escalate all the way once they get started.
There's reasoning at one point, if we have a restrained strike that only kills maybe 50 million in the Soviet Union, that will make it, well, they'll understand that we're holding back.
There was a restraint. In 1961, during the Berlin crisis, which is often forgotten in the shadow of the Cuban crisis, but it was in some ways even more serious, some officials did come up with a plan where with 88 weapons dropped by 44 bombers, we might, and there was the key phrase, might be able to completely destroy the Soviet nuclear force so they couldn't retaliate. But there was a caveat. This was a 33-page study that I got declassified that very detailed. There was a caveat, though, and that is, well, some of their weapons might survive, especially tactical weapons in Europe, and if they retaliated, millions of Americans and Western Europeans would get killed. So even with this overwhelming superiority that we had at the time, it was no magic ring. It was no magic bullet. You still faced the kind of catastrophic destruction and death that had been undreamed of in decades and eons past.
We're talking to Slate's national security columnist Fred Kaplan about his new book, The Bomb, Presidents, Generals, and the Secret History of Nuclear War. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions you have for our guest about nuclear weapons and American policy on the use or non-use of them. Do you want to share your memories, personal or through an older relative, about what it was like to live with what seemed like the very imminent threat of nuclear war? What thoughts do you have on nuclear weapons today, 2020? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Fred Kaplan stays with us. His latest book is The Bomb, Presidents, Generals, and the Secret History of Nuclear War. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about U.S. policy toward nuclear weapons from the beginning to today? Do you have hopes that nuclear weapons can come off the table in the U.S. and around the world? What do you think it would take to get there? Call 800-642-1234. Go to your calls. Willem is with us in Colfax. Willem, hi.
Hi. I had been reading this book by Rick Wilson about the president, and in there he makes a reference to them, the president, and I think Rex Tillerson was there, and they're in this room called the Tank with all the generals.
Mm-hmm.
Trump proposed that he wanted to increase the nuclear arsenal by tenfold.
Well, that's...
Have you ever heard that?
Fred,
well,
you tell that story,
in my book. That's actually in my book. What happened was they showed him a chart of nuclear weapons over time. And, you know, the peak was in 1969 when we had 32,000 nuclear weapons. Now we have less than one-tenth that number. And the idea of this chart was to show, you know, the value of arms control treaties and the fact that dangerous as the world is, it's more stable than it used to be. But that's not how President Trump saw it. He pointed to the peak and he said, how come I can't have as many nuclear weapons as those presidents did? And it was explained to him that, you know, you really don't need them. And if we started building that many, people would think we were on course to launch a first strike and they would match us. And he took it okay. But then a couple weeks later, he was talking with his national security advisor in the White House, and he remembers his chart again. And he says, how come I can't have as many nuclear weapons as that president did? And the point is, and this is, you know, the longest chapter in this book is about the Trump years, and the second longest chapter is about the Obama years. So this isn't just a book about ancient history, but my observation about Trump is that he doesn't really look into the details of national security needs. It's pomp and drama. He likes a parade. You know, one theme of this book is that almost all of our presidents have gotten into crises in which the serious use of nuclear weapons has been contemplated. And in each of these cases, the presidents have immersed themselves deeply in the logic and the strategy, in the scenarios and the consequences, guided by briefers who discuss these things in a very calm, rational way. And then they have all come to the conclusion that, no, I'm not going there. It's too risky, and they scramble out of the rabbit hole and try to come up with a diplomatic solution to the crisis as quickly as possible. And I just don't see this kind of deliberative trait in our current president.
You and some members of Congress, you write, and this was in the news a while back, members of Congress saying, hey, wait a minute. Do we really want to put all this control over our nuclear arsenal in the hands of one person, maybe in the hands of this particular person?
Yeah, there was a hearing. It wasn't covered much at the time. It was public. It was open. I watched it on C-SPAN 3. It was the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. It was the first time that Congress had held a hearing on this subject since the mid-1970s. And they came away, and in one part, you can get a transcript of this hearing. At one moment, a Democratic senator said, look, the reason we're having this hearing, let's be frank, is because we have a president who's reckless, poor judgment, who might get us into a war. This was around the peak time of the fire and fury period. Not a single Republican on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee challenged this premise. It was concluded in this hearing that, yeah, the president, it's up to him. He can do this all by himself if he wants. But then afterwards, Congress did nothing about this. And one of the people testifying, it was a retired general named Robert Kaler, who had been the commander of Strategic Command right before this. And he came away from the hearing very frustrated because, as far as he's concerned, hey, if Congress wants to change the launch authority, especially for a first strike, not a response to a strike, that's up to them. They can do it. But what you should not do is to publicly question, raise doubts about the reliability and legitimacy of the command structure, and then not do anything about it. And that's what Congress did. And, you know, that's what Congress tends to do. They, you know, not except for a few years after passage of the War Powers Act in the 1970s, Congress just doesn't want to take responsibility for things. They put it all on the president and hammer him if things go badly and try to bask in his shadow when they go well. But on something like this, where there really should be some kinds of checks and balances, they have abdicated their role.
Thanks for the call, Willem. We're talking to Fred Kaplan about his new book, The Bomb, Presidents, Generals, and the Secret History of Nuclear War. Back to your calls. Marcus is with us in Oregon. Marcus, hi.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to put a little personal experience here. I was living in Hawaii on Maui at the time a few years ago that we got alerts on our phone.
Right, right.
Regarding, the incoming ballistic missile. And, you know, we all actually thought that we might die. I mean, at first we thought it was a prank or a hack. No, we actually, there's a moment in time that we thought we might die due to nuclear war and an incoming ballistic missile. Mm-hmm. And after this 40 minutes had passed, my takeaway was why do people allow the leaders, any leaders, whether it's India or Pakistan or the U.S. or Russia, two leaders possibly could ruin it for every one of us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Marcus, no, thanks for that call. In our last couple minutes, Fred tackled that question for us.
Well, no, that's exactly the point. And, you know, there have been many instances, more than most people know, of situations where, in the case he talked about in Hawaii, it was a computer glitch, where either due to a computer glitch or to just a radar malfunction, you know, a flock of geese being mistaken for a flock of missiles, it looks like, you know, missiles are coming our way. And in some of those instances, it has only been because, say in one case, a Russian lieutenant colonel who looked at the radar screen, saw missiles coming, decided on his own authority that, nah, this can't be right. I'm not going to tell my superiors. You know, they might have saved the world by doing that. So, yeah, these things are subjected to... Here's my ultimate take, and it's from the last page of the book. You know, we've gotten away with not having a war, which was kind of a miracle, due to partly because nuclear deterrence works generally, but partly because we've had very shrewd leaders, and partly because we've had good luck. The real concern is what happens if you have a combination of a slow-witted leader and something like what the caller was calling about what happened in Hawaii is some spate of bad luck. That's the real concern of how things could go wrong.
Fred, thanks again for joining us today.
Sure, thank you.
That's Slate national security columnist Fred Kaplan. We talked to him today about his latest book. It's called The Bomb, Presidents, Generals, and the Secret History of Nuclear War.